Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric's couple on the show as always. Breaking down a busy day on the trail yesterday for the Oregon football program. Three verbal commitments in one day. Three verbal commitments basically in like a span of three hours.
Yeah, right.
Really quick, fast and furry. Jackson, our colleague who covers the recruiting side, on duckterritory.com has some stuff up from breaking down the impacts and also the commitment stories for all three of them. We are going to pivot a little bit. We were expected to talk some Oregon football 2026 on the field representing the Ducks roster discussions. We're going to pivot. We're going to push that to later this week just because, hey, as Eric said in our brief pre-production meeting, if we want to really want to call that. Hey, they got three commitments. We probably should talk about this. Yes, you are 100% correct. We should talk about this. Let's start with the first one. Malachi Garlington, he flipped his verbal commitment to the Ducks, was committed to Washington State. It's an interesting recruitment for him because he's a three-star receiver, 6'3", 180 pounds. He's out of the state of Oregon, Nelson High School, Happy Valley, kind of a suburb area of Portland. Has a wide range of Mountain West, Pac-12, I guess now Pac-12 schools. Has a wide range of Ivy League schools that have also offered him a scholarship. He showed up to an Oregon football camp about a week or so ago, participated, landed an offer, and then a couple days later, landed gave a verbal commitment to the Washington State Cougars. And then shortly after that decision, he committed to the Ducks and he flipped. He's got a scheduled official visit this weekend to Washington State. We'll see if that sticks. But nonetheless, it's a big-bodied receiver. It's one, Eric, that's, I think it's interesting that they need receivers in this class. And with how Oregon has recruited across the country the last couple of seasons, their first verbal commitment comes from an in-state prospect. I don't know how many people had that on the bingo card, but I think they're probably banking on this as, hey, this is a guy that we think has a super high ceiling. And if we give him some time, he probably could develop into a true stud.
And to your point of not having something on the bingo card, it would be Oregon recruiting and landing commitment from somebody from Happy Valley, Oregon, right? Like that's far from a hotbed of talent. And I know it's like in the suburbs of Portland, but it's just not – Nelson High School is not a school I've ever really heard Oregon dive in, you know, deep into. Good for Malachi for differentiating himself, like you said, on the camp circuit and going from somebody who was – shoot, not really on our radar like 10 days ago or so to being somebody now that we're going to be talking about in a podcast and now talking about throughout his, you know, the rest of the recruitment and then assuming it continues to go well, his time at Oregon. So, yeah, one of those kind of fun, quick rises in the recruiting rankings. Recruitment, I should say. And my next point is going to be, will that follow by a recruiting bump in the rankings? Because this is somebody who currently is the sixth best player in the state. The lowest ranked recruit in this class, somebody who in the composite is closer to 1600 than, like a top 500 recruit, which is kind of more what you're looking at conventionally from an Oregon three-star perspective. So get that side out of the way here early of like, I'm curious on what the recruiting ranking progression is going to be, but size is fantastic. I know you did a film breakdown, Matt, a couple of days ago. So I'll send it over to you since you may have been a little bit more closely, more close eyes on Garlington, but I think it's a fun story. And at the very least, in a couple of years from now, based upon his size and athletic intangibles, maybe as somebody who, you know, sneaks their way onto the field, you know, and carves out a role, which is going to be difficult when you look at the type of talent Oregon has secured the last several cycles. And mind you, still in on some very big time wide receiver recruits in 2027, along with somebody like Garlington.
Yeah, Garlington is, like I said, 6'3", he's 180 pounds, and a lot of his work from the receiver position at the high school level as a junior, I was actually kind of impressed because it wasn't like, hey, we're going to sit here and we're just going to throw a back shoulder fade to you in the end zone, and you're just going to just catch touchdowns because you're significantly taller than the average high school defensive back in the state of Oregon. They did throw fades. They did run deep balls to him. He did catch those. He did show the separation, the ability to high point balls, to run past defenders. That certainly was evident on his film, but he also had a lot of screen game touchdowns, catching the ball on a quick step forward, step back, and then go after getting the ball in his hands. They ran him on crossers, just really short crossers across the field, and he just would get the ball and run away from the competition. And then he showed the ability to go as, you know, a guy in the slot or out wide on slants and go into the middle of the defense and take contact, take catches, wide body, wide catch radius, and make plays. And I was overly impressed. You know, there's definitely going to be probably an adjustment just from a high school in Oregon to the level that Oregon plays at. That's pretty normal, though, for a lot of guys. But he's got a lot of the intangibles that you like. And now it's, can you refine them? Can you continue to develop them? Can you expand on them to make him a multifaceted guy? But I go back to look at the depth chart at receiver. We were preparing to do a depth chart in 2026. This is kind of be a little bit tied into that. But they just have two seniors on their roster, Evan Stewart and Iverson Hooks. There are no juniors.
Hooks is a junior, I believe, actually.
Oh, yes. Evan Stewart's the lone senior. Iverson Hooks is a junior, so he does have an extra year of eligibility if he wants it. And then they've got just a conglomerate of sophomores, true redshirt sophomores, redshirt freshmen, and true freshmen on this roster. And honestly, like we've talked about it at like defensive back too, it's really hard to recruit. I'm not going to sit here and suggest that Oregon settled and just took this guy. Yeah. But to go out and find a five-star, to go out and find multiple top 10 receivers in the country like they did last season at the position and convince them to sign up, that's going to be incredibly difficult. And it's almost like the Billy Bean Oakland A's kind of move here where, hey, we know we can go get this guy. There's a lot of intangibles that we think he can turn into, that we could mold, that we can build. He's probably going to need a year or two of development. And then you look at your depth chart and go, there's probably not really going to be an opportunity for a guy, unless he's the number one receiver in the country or that kind of a caliber of a kid, to come here and play right away unless he's willing to wait 1 or 2 years. And it's kind of a perfect fit for both parties here.
He's a developmental prospect. Oregon, like you said, has roster space for a developmental prospect at this position in particular. And to your point, there's no pressure, right? Like this is not you recruit him in 27. He better be ready by 28. I mean, if he's not contributing, you know, even for his first 2 to 3 seasons, I don't think that's necessarily a disappointment, assuming he has that patience and understanding of that possibly being an outcome, right? So this is, like we said, he's got some upside physically, got the great size. I'm curious to see some testing numbers in terms of what we know about him from a straight line speed with a 40, if he does a little track, maybe get some 100 meter times, things like that. But this is clearly somebody they feel that they can build into a player that can contribute at some point. And at a certain point, you take some developmental players, you work on them, and maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. Regardless, I think it's worth the time. And we should also note, with the way Oregon has developed recently at this particular position, you're seeing players take that step. I'd be curious to see what Garlington ends up being here if we do kind of a retroactive looking back sort of a podcast in a couple of years.
Let's move to the next most recent one that has committed to the Oregon Ducks. And that's George Van Zandt, tight end prospect from state of Oregon as well. He's the number two player in the state. So Oregon now has 3 of the 6 top players in the state. Josiah Molden, obviously, is the number one player, 4-star prospect who's committed to Oregon right now. Van Zandt, so Oregon now gets the number one and the number two player in the state. Previously committed to Arkansas, made that verbal commitment to the SEC program much earlier in his recruiting process, but has continued to develop, has continued to get better, and has continued to see his interest from college programs continued to skyrocket. Oregon threw in an offer. They were able to get him down to Eugene for an unofficial, for an official, and the work paid off with the verbal commitment being flipped to the Ducks about 2 weeks after he decommitted from Arkansas. The Ducks offered him back about a month ago. May 7th is when the scholarship offer went out to him. He decommitted May 27th, so around Memorial Day weekend, and now a couple weeks later, after taking an official visit to Arkansas, he backs off and commits to the Ducks yesterday as well. Two-way player who can play defensive line as well as playing tight end. The Ducks like him as that tight end prospect. He's a three-star recruit. He's ranked 66th in the country at his position. And he's got position size that you like, 6'5", 235 pounds. Again, much like Garlington, this is a guy that had a lot of mid-major. He did have the Arkansas offer, but he also had a lot of Ivy League schools, academy schools throwing him scholarships. And those programs don't extend those opportunities to play football for you unless you are in a highly intelligent football player. And so Oregon, again, I think is getting – they're getting another high upside guy. And it's another developmental piece. And, again, you look at the tight end room. There are no seniors on this roster. Jamari Johnson, Marcus Dixon are both juniors. Jamari Johnson's probably gone after this season. You do have Andrew Olesh. You do have Kendre Harrison. They also added Dayton Raiola, who is transitioning from quarterback to tight end. A.J. Pugliano was a highly regarded high school recruit coming out of Oregon. A knee injury has kind of slowed his development a little bit there. But regardless, again, this is a unit where I think there's probably going to be a shift in terms of are they going to want to use three tight ends every game on a regular basis? Probably not. So the opportunity is going down a little bit from a playing time perspective. And they've just got a lot of young dudes. And this is another player, much like Garlington, where Van Zandt probably has the capability of turning into a player that can play right away, but more than likely is going to need a year or two. And Oregon's not going to need a tight end for a year or two.
Yeah, and before we can kind of dive back into some Van Zandt stuff, just wanted to establish, like, it's pretty cool that they've recruited Oregon as aggressively and as successfully as they have. And it's the successful part basically follows the aggressive part, right? In this case, like, Oregon will land the top players in the state almost exclusively. Like, it's very unusual for them to go all in on a player from this, you know, within the state and miss. But you go back to 2024 was the only other time under Dan Lanning, Oregon's landed three players from the state of Oregon. That was, you mentioned one of them a moment ago, A.J. Pugliano, but also a couple offensive linemen and Devin Brooks and Trent Ferguson last time that they brought in three in-state kids. So, like, tip of the hat to the players in the state for being worthy of the attention and the recruitment from Oregon. And then kudos on Oregon for identifying these guys. And kind of, you know, in the case of at least these two, obviously Josiah Molden being a totally different case, and he's been on Oregon's radars, and we've been probably talking about him on this podcast for like 4 years, but these other two guys are players who've kind of risen, you know, Van Zandt maybe, I know has been kind of maybe in the periphery or on radars at least for the last month or so, but, you know, like we said with Garlington, that's been a really recent kind of flip of attention to him. I think impressive, but that these guys have shown after strong junior seasons that they're deserving of attention from Oregon and then ultimately committing to the Ducks. And, you know, I think with Van Zandt, there's probably more opportunity faster there than there is at receiver, just because, like you established, I think Jamari Johnson's not on the roster in 2027. Dixon could be, you know, back in 2027, but I'm not sure how many snaps he's taking from somebody who's a talented receiver. Somebody in 2027 with these young guys is going to pop. I don't think it'll be Van Zandt, but my point is there's going to be an opportunity for some players to rise and create opportunity down, kind of, you know, trickling down the position group. And I wouldn't be surprised if Van Zandt is somebody we're talking about in the next couple of years here. Now, I'll also establish this is a position that's been turned over quickly in the past. And, you know, when they know that they've needed to have a new influx of talent, you just have to look at this past offseason to say they, I don't want to say pushed out, but several highly regarded younger tight ends left, including a true freshman who'd only been in the program 1 year. They brought in more players, but we'll see what the long-term longevity here is, because it does seem to be kind of more of a revolving door here than at other spots. But that doesn't mean Van Sant can't make it work here. And it's obviously a really cool story whenever you have this many players from the state on the roster, because that is not what the perception of Oregon is. It's, oh, it's a national recruiting brand. Yes, it is, but it can also be one that thrives with some in-state players.
Central Catholic is, I think Van Sant comes from one of the premier programs in the state, and yeah, Central Catholic Rams. Every year, you know, they produce multiple kids that end up signing scholarships to play college football at some level. A lot of the times those guys are landing at Power Four schools, and sometimes those guys are landing with the Ducks. The Ducks have had a history of going up to Central Catholic in the Portland area and pulling in their top players consistently. And so I'm not surprised that Oregon went in here and found this guy and liked what he could do. Now the question becomes, to your point, maybe a brief tangent here, Eric. Mm-hmm. You brought up the fact that Oregon's recruiting the state of Oregon really hard and how unusual that is for Dan Lanning. They have six scholarship offers, or they have five scholarship offers right now out to players in the state of Oregon. Four. They have not offered Josiah Egnemil a receiver. And I don't anticipate they do now that Garlington is committed. But they do have one out, Josh Christensen, an edge player from Lake Oswego. Do they push for his commitment? Do they throw a scholarship offer to linebacker Kawhi Chamberlain, who's an in-city kid from Willamette High School? He's got multiple offers from Power Four schools. How aggressive does Oregon continue to be in the state, or are they kind of set now on having three players from this class? I'm not quite sure. Christensen, they need edge guys. They need bodies. I think there's certainly opportunity there for another high development piece. Do they push there? And then the Chamberlain one, and maybe they do find another player or two to offer in the state later on this cycle. But it's a good point, and one that we have to bring up, that they continue to recruit an area that historically Dan Lanning has said it's important to get the best players, but only when the best players are warranted. And this year there's three of them at least.
Yeah. And I'm curious. I'm going back here, and I wish I would have looked into this prior to recording, but of just the last time they took four or more in-state prospects, because they took three in 2024 and in 2022. Maybe this is too much scrolling for me to try to do it. And it's been, maybe that just also speaks to the fact that I'm now like in 2019 and I've yet to see one.
It's been a while.
It's been maybe close to a decade since they've recruited the state as aggressively as they could if Christensen ends up landing in Oregon. And again, I think if Oregon wants him, I'm going to guess that's going to be the outcome. So, it's fun having, you know, the in-state part of this. And then this may be the natural transition, Matt, but Achilles Reyna,
yep,
not in-state, but certainly regional, as he's up in Seattle at another. You mentioned Central Catholic being maybe the best high school football program in the state, or certainly worthy of in that conversation. Rainier Beach up in Seattle, obviously deserving of that consideration, at least from a talent perspective. They produce a lot of big-time players.
Yeah, and Achilles Reyna comes from Rainier Beach, like Eric said. That's the same high school that Josh Connerly came from.
Yep.
It's a typical known as a high school that's a powerhouse basketball program nationally, not just in the Pacific Northwest, not just in the state of Washington. It's nationally known as one of the best high school programs in the country for that sport. And they also continue to produce year over year Division I football athletes as well. The Ducks have had some success, but going here now and landing one of the state's best players and Achilles Reyna, who has a interesting background. 2025 was his first year of playing high school football. And he historically has been a basketball player, a guy that has a lot of offers from the basketball side of things to play collegiately there. Oregon, and a wide host of other schools have decided that, you know, hey, this is a guy that we think is going to be a really good football player, so let's offer him scholarships. And it's not just, oh, it's the Washingtons, it's the Washington States, the Oregon States, the Pacific Northwest, the Boise States. Those schools have offered, yes. You know, all of them have offered scholarships, but so has a program like Utah, so has a program like LSU, Texas A&M, Arizona, California. A lot of these programs play big boy football and have offered scholarships already for the football side of things. And so, again, I think this is a player where probably a little bit more so in terms of could quickly jump and accelerate his development really fast than a Garlington or maybe a Van Zant. But again, a high upside player, first year football player, also the, you know, the family genetics are there. His dad played defensive end in the, for the Cougars of Washington State in the 90s. It comes from a family that's played collegiate league, played at a high level. This is another player where a lot of size, 6'8", 250, really athletic from a basketball background, now growing into becoming a football player. Really good, I think, high upside take, and one in which, quite honestly, Eric, like, unlike tight end, unlike receiver, Oregon's going to lose four guys to the NFL after this season. DeAndre Robinson's probably going to be an NFL kind of caliber guy the following year. We'll see what Aylin Breland, Matt Johnson do in year or two. But there's not a lot of proven depth on this roster and after this coming season. And there's a need for going out and getting players. And I think this is one that, very similar to Matt Johnson, might grow into someone a lot better than expected a lot quicker.
Hmm. Well, I mean, certainly highest upside of the three guys they landed yesterday. I think that's pretty reasonable. And the traits are unique, frankly, for the position. 6'8", 250. You never know if he's going to continue growing. You mentioned the basketball background. I mean, this is typical basketball size, right? This is a power forward, maybe a small ball center size basketball player playing football, right? And Oregon's had some success historically with, you know, think about Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. I'm not saying, I mean, those are big, much higher rated recruits and probably seen as much better prospects, but you know, those big, long levered players, you know, even like an Elijah Rushing currently on the team at 6'6", got those long limbs, you know, can kind of make some stuff happen off the edge. I'm curious to see what Reyna's, you know, athleticism allows him to do at that size and or whether or not he ends up being, you know, a 6'8", 280 pound defensive end, or if they actually try to bulk him up and see, maybe you can play over, you know, the center or the guard at as a 295, 300 pound player, kind of the way we ended up seeing Buckner and Armstead, you know, achieve at certain points in their NFL career, certainly. So sort of an interesting player because of those size components that we mentioned. And then one other thing, not to kill the momentum on the Rainier part, but I did find the last time Oregon had recruited at least four players in the state of Oregon, 2016, should have figured this out. Justin Herbert was in this class. Also, Lamar Winston and Brady Breeze, a couple of kids from Central Catholic, Cam McCormick from Summit High School, and then A.J. Hotchkins, who was, I can't remember if he played in high school, but he came over as a junior college player, but originally from the state of Oregon. So over 10 years, this is 12 cycles ago, was the last time that they've had potentially as much in-state recruiting as they've had this year. So I just thought that would be kind of a fun nugget to toss at listeners.
Oregon's recruiting class moves into the top 10. They're ranked 8th in the country now with these verbal commitments, these three coming in. The Ducks per recruit average sits at 89.29 points. It's also total score is 224.75. It's just 12 tenths of a point behind Clemson at number 7. So they are really close from jumping up, even to moving into number 6 at Virginia Tech at 225.59. So less than a full point separates Oregon from at 8 from 6. You look at Notre Dame, who's at number 5 at 233, probably would take a couple commitments to make that big of a jump. But again, as we know, in the month of June, it's always quick. Like, things go fast. Commitments happen really quickly. They happen in a flurry. We saw on Monday with three for the Ducks. If they get just one or two more big additions, you know, we could see this class again go from out just outside the top 10 to either right at number six and knocking on the door at five, or maybe even moving into the top five. And or it could be the other way, where other schools are going to get verbal commitments. We know that. Maybe a Flurry comes in and the Ducks drop down. But I think the point here is the Ducks are continuing to recruit at a high level. They're continuing to push the envelope and land the nation's best players. And they, again, yet again, under Dan Lanning, are positioning themselves for a top 10 finish.
You just have to look at this weekend's visitor list here, and we'll have more reporting from Jackson to kind of confirm who will, won't be here. But multiple top 100 prospects, couple top 50 prospects expected to be here. Not saying any of those are imminent commitments to the Ducks, but, you know, you don't have to put it to, you know, you don't have to think too much to figure out, like, hey, it would just take some success here on the trail over the next couple weekends, holding off some of those players who are then going to go visit other schools to see, as Matt pointed out, this really take a step forward and Oregon establish themselves once again in that top five, maybe in that top three. But to your point also, Matt, this has been an extremely competitive, like, recruiting season, it feels like. It feels like there's been constant mobility and constant movement, not only from Oregon, but from other schools around them. You mentioned some of the schools in the top 10. It's not your traditional names necessarily. And I think that speaks to the health of the sport right now, with at least from a prep recruiting perspective, there isn't this massive, massive gap. Yes, there is still a gap at the top, but there's a bunch of schools competing from 5 to 20 that you didn't necessarily anticipate would be competing with each other. So it's been kind of a fun cycle nationally, if you want to take a look at it there too.
It's going to do it for us here on this edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast. We'll be back later this week breaking down more of Oregon's receivers and tight ends for the 2026 season. We'll also continue to monitor and, when needed, dive into the recruiting world, because I imagine, to Eric's point, from a recruiting perspective, big names are going to be on campus. Big names are probably going to commit relatively soon. When it does, we'll break it all down here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. But until then, and until the next one, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.